Welcome to the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast, where we highlight nonprofit innovators, leaders, and influencers every week that are changing the sector for the better. I'm your host, Delaney Mullenix, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub. If you're not for profit and all for purpose, you're in the right place. You see, we know you're already doing good, but we've designed this podcast to help nonprofit professionals find growth, joy, and connection. So tune in weekly for new episodes to elevate your cause, spread the news, and share the resources we share with you.
We want to thank Asana for sponsoring today's episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast. Want to amplify your nonprofit's impact? Asana helps you collaborate more efficiently across teams so you can put more time and resources toward your mission. Go to asana.com/nonprofit to get 50% off. That's Asana, ASANA.com/nonprofit.
Nonprofit Hub, it is my pleasure to introduce Brandon Hatton in this episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast. My name is Delaney Mullenix. I'm the executive director. In this episode, we talked about supporting donor engagement during an economic downturn. Brandon is a conscious wealth expert. He provides actionable insights for people to transform their relationship with money, helping them to move away from a mindset of scarcity towards that of abundance. And his mission is to help nonprofit organizations and their stakeholders build stronger relationships and therefore increase engagement and help people have a stronger impact on their societies at large. Welcome, Brandon. It's so good to have you here.
Thanks, Delaney.
Yeah, of course. So today we're going to talk about supporting donor engagement in an economic downturn. Brandon, tell me a little bit more about your background and how you help nonprofits and how you came to learn all this knowledge.
Yeah, sure. So I run a company called Conscious Wealth, and we have two divisions, Conscious Wealth Living and Investing. And a lot of the side of the living is around educating individuals, companies, nonprofits, around, I think, the topic you just mentioned, which was expansion. One of the topics is expansion during contraction. And right now, in many ways, it doesn't matter what the Federal Reserve or what the TV or radio is calling it. In many ways, we're in contraction. And so how can we help people and how can we cultivate more abundance during this time? Is really what we think about with everything we do. It really is the backbone.
Yeah, I love the way you said that, expansion during a contraction. For those of us who might not be as tuned into like the economic environment that's happening right now, I mean, what exactly is happening and how is that affecting nonprofits right now? I've heard actually two different contradicting statements. One person saying, technically, based on the data, we're not in a recession. And some people say, because we've had a decline in these specific numbers, we are technically in a recession.
Yeah. And the reason I paused it, I was wondering how I was going to answer that question. And I think everybody's tuned into the economy, if nothing else, into their own economy.
Right.
And all but a few of us are feeling tighter in money. I mean, inflation is real for everyone.
Yeah.
Inflation is less real if you own your house, but it's still real.
Yeah.
And everyone has heard that either we're in a recession or it's coming.
Right.
And so everyone has been exposed to this fear or this belief that we think may or may not be true.
Yeah.
So I think however any autocrat or technocrat decides to describe it, we have some familiarity with that. And when there is fear, it's a lot harder, or it may be more of a challenge to be generous or to give. And that's what nonprofits are in right now, among other things that nonprofits have always been facing.
Right.
I mean, some of the big ones that nonprofits have always been facing is that the constant desire or need to prove that they're a business, or the constant need to justify what's called overhead, where any other business just calls it like operating expenses.
Right.
So besides all of these other rhetorics, this is one more thing added on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think for me, although I don't necessarily
tune into news channels or any of that kind of a thing, you hear it around, you know, all of, everyone's talking about it. And I think the supply chain issues are something that I notice on a daily basis, right? Like there was like the egg crisis, we couldn't get toilet paper. And I mean, that puts you into a scarcity mindset. You're like, I can't help you with like, you know, food or whatever else. Like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get it.
And in truth, eggs were scarce.
Yeah.
Right. And so then they became more expensive. Okay. And if you absolutely needed eggs to survive, you might go hungry.
Yeah.
Luckily, none of us do.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about your history? I know that you do a couple different things through your company. Some of that is helping individuals with their spending, with their philanthropic investments. Can you speak a little bit more to that? Because there's a question that I'd like to ask you about how you might spend your money.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, my history is I began as a very traditional financial advisor. I worked at one of those really big firms and had a bit of a falling out with the industry in the sense that I no longer liked working in the industry. It was no longer serving me. And in many ways, it wasn't serving my clients in the way I wanted to. Right. So I had a choice. I could quit or I could forge a path for myself. And I decided I was going to do things a little bit differently. And over the years, started my own company where we manage money for clients in a different way. And we don't just manage money in the traditional value proposition that very large investment firms have. The traditional value proposition is if you give us money, we'll give you more money. And that's just not necessarily true. And in fact, oftentimes it's false. Like there are times where we don't give more money because returns, like investments go down.
Yeah.
And so if we're really just commoditizing ourselves like that, it pays a heavy toll on you. So we've started to incorporate, well, where else can we find value in the work that we do? Where else we can do is we can look at clients' families. We can look at their values. We can help them talk about money. And then we can talk about what type of impact would you like to have in the world with your investments for financial return, which are usually stuff like stocks and bonds and alternative investments, but also your investments for social return. And how, in other words, philanthropy or sometimes looking at some types of impact investing.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking this more, and I hate to say it because it's such a cliche word, but it's true, like a holistic approach to our clients. And how do we help cultivate abundance? How do we help reduce fear? Because we know human beings have a strong conviction that human beings are better off when they're not afraid. I'll stop there.
Yeah. No, I mean, go ahead, like keep talking. And I also think it's interesting that, I think when you're younger and you think about where you see yourself in the next 5 or 10 years, there are a lot of people who say, I want to be in a place where I can give to these causes in a way that has more impact. And then I think once they get to that spot of wealth or like having that ability to give back, I think to your point, I think sometimes the more you have, the more you actually feel like you're in that scarcity mindset. I think like for me, even like growing professionally as like my salary has increased, I feel like I might have even been more generous a couple of years ago. Can you speak to how that happens? Like what happens in our minds?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things going on there. Like I think what you're saying is that when we look out into the future, we think, oh, we're going to grow so much and we'll be so much generous and we don't really get there. We can grow into our salaries quite easily. Mm-hmm. And as human beings. I think what's really important to think about, or what I like to think about and what my book talks a lot about, is that there is something between hoarding money and giving it away, mm-hmm. right? Putting it in the bank or giving it to a philanthropy. And if you're given the choice of one of two things, most people will say, I'll hoard it, right? Like, most people are like, I want to keep it.
Yeah.
So how do we create a spectrum along this between these two things? So besides just making an impact, or besides just saving my money, but how else can I make an impact? I can make an impact through business, just straight up business. I can make an impact with my daily interactions with people.
Mm-hmm.
I can make an impact through some types of impact investing or some revenue generating nonprofits. So where there is a business model, right? And not all philanthropy can have a business model. I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. I believe that sometimes we need to support it. And then there's just straight up giving it away, or where there's only a social return. And when we start, and we have clients that actually have this, like financial assets, maybe some type of investments that have social positives or an ESG. Then we have some that are like impact investing. Then we have just pure philanthropy. And we measure asset allocation across those, not to mention their own personal impact that they're making with their day-to-day lives or through their business.
I like that. Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes a lot more holistic, or it becomes a lot more expansive, as opposed to just a binary, either I'm giving it away or not.
Mm-hmm. And there's no one size fits all.
No.
Patient model, yeah.
It's constantly dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know, I have one client, and they're one of the most generous guys, but his form of generosity is very different than like what you would think. He meets somebody working at the gym who's making 10 bucks an hour checking people in, and says, oh, I really like this person. I think I could get this person a job. He'll get, hire her on, train her on, bring her into the fold, and double or triple her salary than she was making before, have a real impact above and beyond some of the philanthropic giving that he does. And I should say him and his wife do. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that you called that out, because there are these incredible people out there that aren't a part of necessarily like, right, the nonprofit sector, the philanthropic sector, but in their essence, that is who they are and like what they're doing. So I know we're talking a lot about helping individuals like allocate their money in terms of investing it for social impact or other causes. How do you help nonprofits specifically? Do you do any work within like the actual organization? And I know there's been a couple things mentioned on your website about working with board members as well.
Yeah, so my favorite way to do it, so we do work with community foundations and nonprofits who are in fundraising mode. We help strengthen their relationship with their donors. And one of the ways we do that is help cultivate abundance, or help them see ways that they can actually give and, mm-hmm. and the impact they're giving. My favorite way is bringing spouses together in a room. I think when we bring spouses together and have them talk about money, it's always a gift. Mm-hmm. A lot of times there's assumptions that they're on the same page, but bringing them on and having them talk about money, telling about their original money beliefs or their money memories, as we talk about at Conscious Wealth, and figuring out, are those money memories still applicable today, or is it time to let go of some of these money memories or some of these beliefs around money? I think there's this idea, and you kind of spoke to it a little bit before, well, I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to have this, 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 and this, and then I can be really abundant. Then I can let go.
Mm-hmm.
And what if it's actually the other way around? What if it's, if I'm already abundant, then I will have this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And it's a huge leap of faith. But when you give more freely with your time and talent and financial assets, you actually have more. It's the paradox of abundance, is the more you give, the more you get.
Yeah.
It's not the reason to do it, but it's time and again we see it happen. What we do is help their donors see that or find their truth within that.
Want to amplify your nonprofit's impact? Asana's powerful work management platform helps you collaborate effortlessly across teams so you can put more time and resources toward your mission. From program delivery and fundraising campaigns to volunteer management and more, manage all your work teams in Asana. Nonprofits get 50% off and resources from their team. Head to asana.com/nonprofit to grab your discount. That's Asana, ASANA.com/nonprofit.
There are resources that are trying to inspire this mindset. Do you have any recommendations for our listeners? I'm a big reader. I love books.
Besides my book?
Yeah. Tell us more about your book.
My book, Conscious Wealth, Money, Investing in a Financial Awakening for the person who has it all. Look, I think it's a great resource because I wrote it, but what we do within our workshop, some of the work that we do is talk about the somatic or physical sensations of abundance and fear, and start to recognize, what does that feel like in our body? So if there's something you're saying, like, what could people do? You can read a lot of stuff, but I actually believe the answers are within our bodies. Mm-hmm. And if you are starting, you know, I'll give you a real life example. This morning, I had a bit of a dispute with somebody who owes me money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, am I going to have to go to battle on this one? And then, you know, I start having this thing in my mind, like, well, I'll hire the best lawyers and I'll do this and I'll do this. And then just sitting still and saying, okay, what are the physical sensations that I have in my body when I'm in this idea of scarcity or fear? And just recognizing that, and then also recognizing, like, right now I feel pretty darn good. So, like, yeah, taking a body scan now and understanding what is that like, and starting to recognize what does abundance feel like in fear. And again, like, these are big words. So, like, what is scarcity is just fear. What does it feel like to be in fear?
Yeah.
And the opposite of fear, which is abundance, is like love, like what, like, or acceptance. What is it like to just accept whatever the reality is in my life right now? Even though this person might not pay me this money, what does it feel like to accept that? And I think getting to know your body and how it feels with those concepts is probably better than reading any book, including mine.
Yeah. And that's probably especially important for someone who's in a fundraising role. I think that energy is felt and seen by people that you're approaching.
It's widely important. Yeah, it's very important. And even within our team on the investing side, so we work with some people with really large financial assets. And over the years, we've done training on compassion. We've done training on understanding and humility, because it is hard. Because our clients are almost always in a much stronger financial situation.
Mm-hmm.
Than the people that work with me. The belief is, well, they have so much money, how could they have problems? This is a small problem. They can jump on a jet or a boat or a blah, 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 blah. But obviously that's not true. And so within fundraising organizations, having compassion for the donors is a really big thing. And if you don't have it, it's going to be really hard to gain it or to increase funds to get donors.
Yeah.
You do understand that. Although they are financially different than you, their situation is very different than you. They have many of the same fears and concerns as you do.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit more about this strategy that you call conscious wealth management?
Yeah. When I came up in the business and wealth management as in the big firms, it was all based around fear. We used to be coached, believe it or not. We would say, all right, they would tell us, all right, now when you go ahead and find a client or find somebody who's a potential client, you're at a cocktail party, just ask them, what's keeping you up at night? Like, that was our key. So everything was around fear. In all of our presentations, I had a guy used to tell us, well, whenever you're giving a presentation and trying to pitch a client, pitch just slightly above their head to make them feel like you're smarter than them. Honestly, I couldn't make this stuff up. It still goes on today. It still goes on today. And there's a lot of really good people in my industry. So when we built out this form of wealth management, started to evolve, we're like, well, if we don't use fear, then how do we invest in a way that cultivates abundance? And so one thing we don't do is we don't use really complex products.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a complex product would be a mutual fund with thousands of holdings, or even hundreds of holdings sometimes, or sometimes leverage. Because what happens is our client will look at the statement and they don't know what they own. If they don't know what they own, if there isn't transparency, it's kind of hard to be comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just trust me, right? So the industry went through this thing, and they still do this, just product after product after product. And it's creating a separation from clients and their money. And the more levels of separation they have, the more difficult it is to not live in fear. Why wouldn't you be afraid if you didn't know what you own, if you didn't know why you own it?
Yeah.
So that's a big component of it. And the other is just the way that we market to people. And when I say market, just talk to them, or when we're in client meetings, it's always, how can we help our clients understand they're in a really strong situation? Because every single one of them are. They're in really strong situations. And the worst thing our clients could do is panic. And I think what's not good for our souls, if I dare say it, is to hold them in fear so that we can keep them as clients. We can add so much value in so many other ways than creating fear.
Yeah, of course. you mentioned there are a lot of, you know, really intelligent people in your industry. What's one piece of advice that you could give to someone starting out in your career, especially if you wanted to help guide them into helping their clients invest to support important causes around the world?
Patience. I mean, it took me a long time to build this business. Mm-hmm. I would say independence. Like we run an independent firm, so we are product agnostic. We don't have to sell any specific product. We sell very few. We don't have shareholders as well, so that's kind of nice. And we don't have shareholders, so we're serving our clients. So getting rid of some of these conflicts of interest are really important.
Yeah.
But I really think it's working for a company. If you can do it on your own, but man, is it hard nowadays. It was hard when I did it. It's a really hard road. So joining up with a team that really lives and breathes it, I think is the easiest way to get started and the best way. Mm-hmm. And if you find that team, you might just stay with them. Yeah. The industry's changed so much though over the past decade or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are some more ways, you know, we talked a little bit about fundraisers being able to understand like their relationship with money and having their own feeling of living in abundance versus scarcity. Are there any other tools, strategies, things that during times of economic downturn that nonprofits or board members can do to help support donor engagement?
Well, I can tell you what we do. So one is working with the fundraisers themselves, but then helping them when they've learned these lessons, pass these lessons on to their donors in a way of strengthening relationships with them.
Right.
And helping their donors talk about these topics. I think they have all the tools, just kind of bringing it together, which is really understanding what are your family's values? What is your family? You know, we talk about family mission. But really, that's just the change you want in the world. And so having them help define what that looks like, sometimes that will push money in different directions than you, but just as often, it'll bring more money to them.
Yeah.
So all of our clients have a statement. And you don't have to, you know, have a statement of their values, have a statement of the vision for the world. They have their own personal vision as well.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be just wealth management that does that. I think that they can start picking, starting with their top donors and building out those types of documents would be helpful.
Yeah. I like that each person that you work with has like their own statement or mission or vision. I think that helps nonprofits identify the correct donors. Cause even if you might be able to get that person to donate one time, you're not right. Like you're not aligning with their statement or their mission or their vision. So they might not be a recurring donor and you're kind of just spending more time working with someone that is going to take more of your resources to keep around. So I love that. I mean, that's a great way just to get to know your donors. That's great.
Yeah. It's a great way. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Any other insight on, oh, actually my $1 million question that I wanted to ask you, and that's like no pun intended, but, since you are the wealth advisor, the specialist of the episode today, if you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on?
What would I spend it on? You mean, I don't understand the question.
What would you do with $10 million?
What would I do with $10 million?
Yes.
Man, $10 million?
Yes.
I would put it in an interest-bearing, I'd buy a CD or a bond for 5%, and I would live off that for 3 years until I figured out what I really wanted to do with it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's $500,000 a year. I'm pretty sure I can handle that living that lifestyle. I'd be able to do that. It's actually the same advice we give for our club. We've got a couple clients right now who are selling a business. And we say for at least 1 year, let's just put it in CDs, live off the cash flow, because you can do that now.
Yeah.
And you'll know better what you want to do in a year.
Yeah. This also reminds me, I feel like that was a good question to ask you because, you know, you don't often speak with someone who has this much knowledge on allocating, you know, your own financial assets, but have you ever helped a nonprofit invest in things like that as sources of revenue or sustainability for their organizations? Is that ever something that you've dabbled in?
Yeah, for sure. But typically we are investing in nonprofits that are related to our families. So we don't actively go out there and try to manage nonprofits' funds, what we call institutional money, because what really fulfills us is working with families. Mm-hmm. And so if we're working with a family and they have a nonprofit or they have a foundation, gladly manage that money because that's part of the relationship. Mm-hmm. But we don't actively seek to manage nonprofit money. And for that reason, too, we're able to work with their top donors because we're just going in there. Really, when we're talking to nonprofits or community foundations, we're just spreading this message of abundance. Mm-hmm. And we know good things always come. We're not going in there talking about investing. We're not talking about allocation. It's really just about somebody's relationship with money as a service because it's what we believe in. And so that wall between us and nonprofits actually quite helps us get the message out better.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, where can our listeners find you online if they'd like to learn more about your model and finding some more resources on this?
Yeah, so it's consciouswealth.com. That is our website. And I think we're going to air here around the 15th or so, the mid-month. And by July, it's going to be a brand new, sexy site. It'll be awesome. So check back, too.
Yes, that's exciting. Websites are exciting. I can nerd out on a new website.
Oh, you're going to love this one.
Yeah.
That'd be great. We are excited. Yeah.
That's great. And your book is already out in for sale.
It's out in the world. And if you don't like reading, it is on Audible and all those other audio outlets.
Love audiobooks.
Yeah, I did it. I actually read the thing. It was the hardest thing I've done in my professional life.
To read your own book?
Oh my God. You have no idea.
I don't have any idea. No.
It was awful, but it came out well.
Good. I feel maybe the same way. I don't ever listen to myself on podcasts. I just never go back. I just never listen to them.
I never go back.
No.
Nope. Keep moving forward, Delaney.
Well, that's funny. Well, we always try to include a segment at the end of every episode called Good News for Nonprofits. What is one bit of good news for the nonprofit sector that you'd like to share?
Interest rates are up. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Because nonprofits need to hold cash. They need to hold cash to stay operating, to stay afloat. And over the last decade, they have not made any money on that cash. So I think that's really good news. And I would say another great news is younger generations are digging the nonprofits, right?
Yeah.
I think they're going to really create. They're not that older generations don't, but younger generations are increasingly socially conscious and want to see change.
Yeah.
I'd be 2-for-1, Delaney. 2-for-1.
Very, very good news. Thank you for being so generous. You're living this life of abundance.
You're welcome.
Yes. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on. Any last words for the Nonprofit Hub crowd?
You know, I always finish with just the ultimate statement of abundance, that you are enough. I'm enough. You are enough. And we're all going to be okay. We're going to get through this craziness.
Yes. Great. Well, it's been a pleasure, Brandon. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast episode. For more resources on fundraising, marketing, and all things nonprofit, be sure to check out the number one nonprofit toolbox at nonprofithub.org. We hope you'll join us next week for another episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast.